I need to figure out what just happened. It was from her end. Wow, that was amazing.
Do we have you both?
Cindy? Lynn? Are you both there now?
Yeah.
How about you, Lynn?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and Cindy?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, just making sure. All right, I'm going to put you on. She's running some intro music right now, okay? Scared to put you on at the moment, ladies, so bear with me, please.
Tell me lies. Fleetwood Mac. We're going to learn more about that subject this evening. Tell me lies. My electricity has been out today. I don't have very much access to my computer, so we're going to have to depend on you guys to call in. Because I don't have any way for you to come back at me on the internet like we usually do. Tonight we're going to talk about voice technologies and tell me lies. This is Sound Health on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, and we're delighted that you could take a few minutes from your day to join us to learn about self-health and how you can have dominion over who you are. Tonight's guests are Cindy Warden and Lynn Robbins. Cindy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Lynn, are you on the line with us? I guess Don is getting Lynn on the line with us. Cindy, I cannot get access to my computer, so you're going to have to introduce yourself. And I know your company is Voice Technologies, but give me the official name of the company and your website.
Hello?
Hi,
Cindy,
this is
are you there?
Robin.
Cindy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cindy, tell me the official name of your company that you and Lynn run.
Lynn is the president of the company Voice Analysis Technologies. It's a limited liability corporation run out of Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay, and your website?
Our website is www.voiceanalysistech.com.
And what did you think of that song I just played?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
Oh, it was Fleetwood Mac. Tell me lies.
We didn't get to hear that song.
Lynn, are you on with us now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We're going to talk about lying. Why people lie, why it's important, why some animals lie, what you guys do with lying. Lynn, as president of the company, why did you construct a company that dealt with whether or not people are lying? Is that important?
In a lot of cases, dealing with the way people lie or the reasons people lie is very important, especially when it comes to law enforcement and some of the areas that we work in, such as government liabilities, government risk factors, such as terrorism and people coming across borders. We deal with a lot of different lies that are very important to our national security and to public security locally.
So you're talking about safety, lies that are important to keep us safe. We've been talking over the last few weeks about, last couple of shows, about why people lie, what would happen to our society if people didn't lie, and what's going on with that. So if you're dealing with information about people lying, what people do that to protect themselves? Why do people lie?
People lie for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we lie because we have an emotional attachment to what we're talking about. Let's say we have somebody we love very much, and the risk factor for that person to tell the truth about something might mean that a family member becomes prosecuted or ends up in trouble for some reason. Then we have lies that, white lies, lies about age, lies about birthdays, lies about things that are insignificant, but we all tell them. Everyday lies are common. I think it's very difficult for all of us to tell the truth all the time. Those are lies that really don't concern us. The lies that concern us are lies where people have the intent to deceive because they're trying to hide something that's very significant, would bring harm to other individuals. Lies like, do you belong to a terrorist organization? Those types of lies mean something. Sex offenders, good example. When you're talking with sex offenders, they lie to cover up what their thought processes are and what they've done. And sometimes we ask the wrong questions. Those types of lies are very, very important to our well-being, to be able to uncover them.
Do you have an underlying need to go into... How'd you guys get started in looking at people's voices and lying?
Well, the company, the technology has been around for quite some time. I think all of us have heard of some of the other technologies that are out there. Most of those are stress-related technologies that deal with people yes-no answers when they're in an interrogation-type situation. This technology is an investigative focus tool, and the technology was brought into the United States several years ago for a couple of different reasons. One of them was a psychological tool, and the other one was, you know, it can do a lot of good for people that are in military circumstances where you can uncover individuals. I think primarily the reason we got involved with it was personally because I saw what it could do. I understood. It scared me a little bit when I first saw it, and after I realized the potential of the technology, I realized how important it was to investigators or to the military people. And it became a very, very big passion of mine. And when it came time to make a decision whether or not I was going to buy into the company or become the reseller of the technology, that was my motivating factor. If I let it go, that meant those people that could use it most and benefit society most wouldn't have it. So I did it.
How is this different from lie detection, where they strap you up with biofeedback equipment and, you know, stick little things on the end of your fingers? And
I'll talk a little bit about that, and then I'm going to let Cindy talk a little bit about that too, because she's one of our trainers. She is actually the head of the training department for our company. And the CVSA is a good tool as an example, and so is Polygraph. Both of those are stress-related tools. CVSA and Polygraph both require jeopardy, both require knowledge of the crime, both require something to be hooked up to you. And when you're investigating or when you're doing an interview with somebody, that's very imposing. And you have to have the right questions to ask in order to bring something from that interview. And if you don't, you leave that interview with an inconclusive or non-conclusive outcome, which means you leave with nothing. The technology we work with is an investigative focus tool. It works with frequency. So as you're talking with people, you're seeing their feedback live. So you base your next question on their last answer. And even if you leave with something where you're still not quite sure, you know all of the areas of concern with that individual. So you can sit down and you can analyze it offline, meaning you can analyze it after you're finished with the interview, and go back and interview them again and ask the questions that are significant to that person that you saw in live conversation. So you go back and you ask the right questions.
I need to back up just a little bit. What does the CVSA stand for?
Computerized Voice Stress Analysis.
Okay, what was the first word? I can barely hear you.
Computerized.
Computerized. Okay, so you guys have a computer program that you take a sample of someone's voice. Do they have to be there?
They don't have to be there. It can be a one-on-one conversation. It can be an interview with that person live. So if I'm sitting across the table from someone and that person of interest has certain things that are bothering them about the questions being asked, I can see them in real time, one-on-one in that conversation on my computer. It is a software that permits me to see what that person is, their emotional and their physiological or their psychological thought process as we have that conversation. So as I'm communicating with that person, I can see what that person is thinking as they're talking. So if I see a subject not sure, an inaccuracy, a stressful situation, and stress with this technology means exactly that, it's stress. Stress does not mean a lie necessarily. It can be indicative of a lie, but it doesn't mean a lie. So that's what we see. We can use it on recorded materials. We can use it on telephones. We can use it on WAV files. There are a lot of different areas. So long as we have voice, it works.
Okay, so I want to pull a few things together here. So the polygraph ties you up to equipment and watches the stress of your body as you talk, but with your system of computerized voice stress analysis, you can do it from a WAV file, and you can tell the same kind of physiological and emotional stress.
Sherry?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I need to jump in. I need to clarify that CVSA is not the computer software that we use. We use a software program called Layered Voice Analysis. And there's a significant difference between CVSA technologies and Layered Voice Analysis. Layered Voice Analysis, like CVSE, is a frequency-based software. However, CVSA measures micro tremors in the voice, which are stress-related, and measure in a yes-no simple question and answer forum, whereas Layered Voice Analysis is a frequency-based technology that measures micro changes in frequency of the voice over time and amplitude domains. And
okay,
they are significantly different sciences, and I need to express that very clearly. Lynn had said, both polygraph and CVSA are both legitimate sciences, but ours is completely different from both. We do not measure anything that's physiological, and we do measure stress, but not in the same fashion that CVSA does. So Layered Voice Analysis is a separate technology all in itself.
Great. Cindy, I can hear you fine, but I can barely hear Lynn, and I'm really having to stretch my ears here to try to hear what she's saying. So feel free to jump in anytime and clarify what's going on.
Okay.
Cindy, I want you to give the audience a few teasers about some of the things that you've been able to tell from, say, maybe some famous cases and things like that. Then let's go back and really explain to people how all this happens and what your company wants to do with it.
Okay, I can start. Some of the cases that we use for training, which are just for fun. I'm not going to talk about any live cases that our customers have sent to us. But some of the cases that we have run that have proven themselves through and through are Bill Clinton and his denial with the Monica Lewinsky scenario. Running it through our software, it shows that there's a great deal of deception associated with his speech and that he suffers from a higher level of not just stress but of imagination and mental effort and mental activity when he is doing that. Another one that we often use is Scott Peterson. We have a couple of different versions of him that we've snatched off the internet, and those themselves again are very consistent with the end results of his incarceration, again showing that he had knowledge of the crime, had knowledge of her whereabouts, was involved in the crime. And if I was an investigator, what I would do then is take these statements, if they were like in my interview process, and use them to help me focus my investigation to help in solving the crime at hand. We've done some other cases over time. We've done sex crimes, robberies, homicides, shaken baby, all sorts of domestic kinds of things.
9/11.
We have done some 911 calls and one from 9/11 itself, all of which are very interesting results. So that just to give you an overview.
Are you allowed to talk about the Aruba case?
Yeah, I could probably talk about it in an overview.
Okay.
I'm working with T.J. Ward out of Atlanta. He runs investigational consultants, and he was hired as the lead investigator by the Holloway family down in Aruba. And I'm sure that many of you have seen T.J. on television. He's been on numerous different shows over time. And he has sent me information, and we have retrieved information over the Internet about that case. I can say that there's a great deal of information that's being hidden from the public, that there is definitely some sexual things that have not been discussed, some drug and or alcohol, primarily drug and alcohol together, issues that have not been fully disclosed, amongst some other things, political things.
These are things that you found out with the layered voice analysis.
Yes.
When you work with somebody like this, do you have to have some kind of secret, I don't even know what you call it, when you're not allowed to talk about things?
Well, I
choose to... Non-disclosure?
I just choose to, non-disclosures in professional relationships are really important to me. Ethically, I feel duty-bound by our clients to protect both the clients and the people that they're in, for the rights of the people that are being investigated as well. So I'm just very cautious that way.
It's like a classification in the service, like a secret classification or top secret. That kind of thing.
They have clearances with the military.
Clearance.
Some of the clearances where you're not allowed to deal with classified materials or relay those classified materials. With most of the investigations with law enforcement agencies, we do non-disclosures. We don't talk about some of the cases that we work on because some of the information shouldn't be relayed to the public until after the case is solved. However, when we speak with people one-on-one or if we do investigations, if we tell the client, we always tell the client to make sure that they let the person that they're interviewing know that we're using the technology. It's very important. It doesn't affect the outcome at all, but we always tell them to abide by the state laws that they're in. For instance, like if they're using it on a telephone line, you always let them know that you're using the technology. Your voice is being recorded for further analysis. It's a disclosure that you should let people know. I mean, even if you're doing a one-on-one interview, just let them know that you're using it.
Mm-hmm. I know in Ohio, if it's one-on-one, we can record the conversation, but we couldn't record the conversation with the two of you and one of me. So it's every state has these oddball laws that are going on.
That's correct. Every state is individualized, and it's up to each state to determine, you know, for the users in that state to make sure that they're following the laws of that state.
So you try very hard to protect the rights of the person that you're talking to, or do you call it interrogation?
Exactly.
I believe that is a primary objective, is to be as ethical with this equipment as possible because it's very revealing.
Boy, that's a good statement, because what is revealed is incredible in some of the cases. I took the training, and Cindy was my teacher, and it was like 2 or 3 years ago, and I loved the class. It was so similar to what we do with voice analysis, just a little different branch. I know you guys can't tell me anything about it, but do you work with secret things, like secret government things?
Secret
just
government?
Yes or no, or if you did, you couldn't tell me, right?
Absolutely not.
But you could say, yes, we do secret things. I think if people knew that some of the things going on in the government to bring those out, that this layered voice analysis is being used for, I think that would help them with all the lies that are going on in the government right now. China, it was in the paper a couple of days ago, China executed its representative to our FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, for taking bribes. But nothing is being done in our country, even though this guy gave them a list of other people who were taking bribes, or so it says on the Internet. But nothing's being done in our country about people who are taking bribes and sweeping things under the table. And I just think this layered voice analysis would be incredible for everyone to have. Is it available to everyone?
No, it's not. It's available to law enforcement. It's available to those who are going to be using it for purposes, for military purposes, law enforcement purposes, but it's not available to the general public. It's just not that kind of, it's a very, very sophisticated tool.
Is it hard to learn? Is it complicated?
Cindy, that one's for you.
I don't think it's hard to learn how to use. You do need to go through training. You do need to be trained by somebody through our company just to ensure that you're properly interpreting the information. We can give information on stress and truth and deception, tension, sexual arousal. We have psychological patternings behind deception. We have excitement, and we have voice manipulation, uncertainty, all of those kinds of things as well. So we have a large gamut of things that we can read when we're talking directly with a person or from a recording that we just run through our system after the fact. And so interpreting those, because with it comes a large amount of additional data, including if the person is hiding information, if the person is in that what we call a fight-or-flight mode, but it's not really a physiological fight-or-flight. It's more of a angst to get out of the room, so to speak, mental wellness, things like that are also in here, potential for drug use, potential for what we call white noise, which is kind of like a guilt complex that runs underneath. So we have a lot of things that are prompt from our computer that tell us a lot about the individual that we're assessing. And so to know all of that data and know how to interpret it properly, you need to go through our training. I would not suggest anybody do it solo.
Cindy,
some of the areas
this is
that
an absolutely
about, there's some areas of concern. We've been watching the media for the last couple of weeks, and we've seen a lot of, there's just a case on TV just now that was about a sex offender that was released and now probably guilty of many murders and sex crimes. One of the areas of interest that I've been trying to work with Department of Corrections in a lot of states is the therapy for sex offenders. During the interview process when they first are incarcerated and then during the therapy process and then upon release, do interviews with these detainees and make sure that whatever therapy they're getting is actually working. It's an area of interest for a lot of departments of corrections across the country. And I know there's some that probably are unaware of it because, like I said before, polygraph is probably the most well-known tool there is. So the awareness is growing.
Cindy, this is an absolutely loaded question. You're across the room or a table from someone. You're not touching them. You have absolutely nothing hooked up to them to show stress, except you've got a microphone in front of them, and you're talking to them, asking them questions. How is that possible that you're just doing that from their voice?
Well, I can't give you the exact science behind it because I'm not aware of exactly how that runs, but I can give you a general idea the way I teach it in class. Basically, we use a USB microphone, and the software, the layered voice analysis software, takes the frequency of the person's voice and analyzes it in a micro change sense. What that means is it looks at the frequency of the voice over a time amplitude and frequency amplitude domain and interacts those two domains together. It uses 8,000 mathematical algorithms and 129 known parameters that the developer of the software, Neiman Cisco in Israel, put together. And basically, all of these things are running at the same time and searching in the frequency of the voice for these micro changes. It's not anything that's audible, so that's why we can do basically any language. I've done Swedish, Japanese, Puerto Rican, slang Puerto Rican, heavy accents like from Great Britain, German, French.
Arabic.
Or Arabic, yeah, you name it, I've analyzed it. What they're saying is not important. It's everything that's coming behind what is being said that's being read. Now, is it important to know what's being said? Yeah, eventually you want to know, because if you don't know what they're saying, you're not sure what you're referencing in terms of truth versus deception. So obviously you have to have like a pivot point to work from. But it's a very, very minute kind of science. Like I said, it doesn't read anything that the polygraph or the CVSA sciences read. I think that those sciences have their place in our society and particularly the polygraph in the history with it. And I think we're an excellent tool to complement in investigational processes.
You guys probably won't say this, but I will. I have seen these compared on TV, and you guys won, totally. You far outstretched them with what you were able to tell was truth and what was not.
Are you referring to the Discovery Channel one?
I think that's the one that I...
Oh, yeah, that's when Tom Winter went out on the Discovery Channel, and he got 21 out of 25 of those questions right. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was great. Would you like to know a little bit more about how this happens physiologically?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Would you like to know a little bit more about how this happens physiologically? You said you can't explain it to people.
The way I explain it seems to be tangible to most individuals.
Mm-hmm.
I have a general idea, but yeah, the more information, the better. But, you know.
Well, there's something called the recurrent laryngeal nerve.
Okay.
And that controls the vocal cords. And that recurrent laryngeal nerve is in a parasympathetic nerve bundle that is a direct connection to the brain. So everything that happens to your body and keeping your body in stasis, fright and flight and all that, goes through that parasympathetic nerve bundle and vibrates from the frequencies of the brain to and from, vibrates that recurrent laryngeal nerve, which controls your vocal cords. This
okay.
is very, very similar technology. We started out using layered voice analysis, but we found out that for our purposes, which was biochemistry,
mm-hmm.
that it worked very, very well on psychological issues like you guys are working, but it didn't work with what we were dealing with. And the medical people demanded that we find the physiological reason, and I think it's the same thing
mm-hmm.
what you guys are working with.
Well, I know that the undercurrent of the software, that the developers took a lot of frequency patterning and were able to develop out the truth and deception part of it. But that makes total sense to me about the vocal cords and that process. And I would say that sounds like it's part of the process. But I can't say for sure because I haven't been told that by the developer.
Okay. How do you deal with people who are sociopaths who just totally believe they did the right thing?
Well, that's a pretty simple answer, Sherry. Basically, a sociopath still knows the difference between right or wrong. Otherwise, they would do their crime in open public and they would openly admit to it. Would we agree on that?
How about people who just stand in your face and say that didn't happen, and they totally believe it didn't?
Well, if they 100%, without any question or doubt in their mind, believed that they didn't do something, then it would come out as truth. But the odds of that happening are smaller, very small, actually.
Well, I have some employees.
Well, you know, I worked with a gentleman who was an untreated schizophrenic who committed a crime some 20-odd years ago. And even after all of this time and even with his mental health illnesses, he had been convicted of this sex crime and served, I think, 7 or 8 years in prison for it. And he, even with his mental health and justification system, still came out as looking very deceptive when he denied
his activity. Do you guys get called in on, say, a theft from a company?
Yes, we have.
So you don't teach the company how to do this. You come in as consultants.
Well, if their company has a legitimate division that's associated with theft prevention or loss prevention, we would teach the personnel within that company on how to use the software and do it themselves. But, yes, we have the option of just getting a recording from a company and analyzing it for them.
Do you tell them what questions to ask?
Not necessarily. Obviously, you have the golden questions. The questions that, without having them asked in an appropriate fashion, we can't answer their own questions. For example, if there was $1,000 stolen from the till, if no one asks, have you ever taken money from the till? Are you aware of, you know, and ask all those who, what, where, when, why kinds of questions associated with that particular incident, then obviously we're not going to be able to give them an answer. So asking the right questions are pertinent.
And it's very important when you ask those right questions that you allow that person to talk. It's not a yes-no type situation. You have to let that person communicate. So you sit there and listen to them for a while, and as they're talking, you can see on the screen whether or not they're being not only honest or deceptive, but if they're not sure or if they're just being inaccurate. It's not a yes-no type answer.
So if a company had this issue, what would be their first step in getting in touch with you?
The website is a good site. It has all of the contact information on it, www.voiceanalysistech.com.
T-E-C-H on the end?
Yep.
T-E-C-H.com?
Yep.
Okay, and so there's phone numbers there and where they can get in touch with you?
Yep.
That is correct.
Okay, so you would make arrangements then to go to their company, or you would invite them? Is there an application that they have to fill out to get into training? How does that happen?
Most people will call, and we can do everything from a webinar. If the group is large enough, like I'm going down to speak in front of 300 people in Tennessee not too long from now, and if there's a large group of people, then we go down and speak in front of them, or we'll do a presentation, and we do webinars. We send out more information if they need more information. We are available by phone and by email, all of which is on the website.
And, of course, if somebody wants to travel to our company, they're welcome to make an appointment and come in and meet us.
And we have a lot of people that come in and observe. If you want to come in and observe training, that's nice, too, because then they get an idea of how the technology actually works.
Oh, this webinar you're talking about, you train everybody online?
No, we train people one-on-one, and it's in a classroom situation. We have a one-week training session when people first purchase the technology. Before they can leave with the technology, they have to go through that week of training. And then at about 6 months, once they're used to using the technology, then they come back for another week of training, an advanced training.
So the webinar is like a demo?
Webinar is a demo where we can show them in real time and in communicating with them one-on-one how the technology works over the website, rather than having to fly there or them fly here. We can do it online.
Okay, Cindy, this is a week's class?
Yes, it's a week-long class, Monday through Friday, about 8 hours a day, and of course I wallop on the homework, so people leave feeling very comfortable after the first week that they can go out and conduct cases and an analysis and come to the correct conclusion.
Are you allowed to give us a bit about what you cover in class?
Sure, I can give you an overview. The layered voice analysis, the first day and a half or so is an introduction to the software, including general manual operations of it. We then go into what is called an online mode, and the online mode is what we call live. You are online with that person. And basically we teach you how to set up the, I want to call it the page, so to speak, where you put in all the demographic and you record their voice and you conduct your investigation. And through that then you can then go into what we call our offline mode, which is our second part of our training in the first week. And that is where you learn how to take a human voice and clean it up and dissect it using the software to prove what we call our offline report, which is a very accurate a reflection of truth and deception and emotion of the person who's speaking at that moment in time after the fact. So the offline is then anything that's recorded from the online or the live mode or anything that's been previously recorded. So if an investigator has conducted an interview and tape recorded it, whether it's a digital tape recording or a reel-to-reel, we can run that into our system and then do an offline analysis and tell them the accuracy or the deception associated with that particular person. We also teach a small part in how to use what we call our recorder, and it works just like a tape recorder would work, but we also can use that tape recorder to convert sound files from other sources or take sound files off the internet. So it's basically a recorder slash converter. And then we spend about a day doing live interviews where we have people from the community come in, and they have scenarios, whether they're truth or deceptive, and then it's up to the user to conduct an online investigation by themselves and then do an offline investigation. We know what the proper final outcome is, and part of their test is to come to the proper final outcome, and they do several of those. We also have an examination that they must pass, which is both paper and pencil and using recordings of real-life situations where we know the final outcome and that it's a truthful final outcome, meaning we know the results of the interview, and they have to come to the right conclusions, and if they're doing everything that the way they should be, then they would be awarded their level one certificate and able to head out with the software.
Do you there's another part of that that's very unique. A lot of Cindy's training process, when they go through that certification, when they go through that last phase, they're doing analysis of the same people. There's like four or five people that go in, and each person that's in training interviews those people. And the findings, for the most part, unless somebody's not done them properly, are repeatable. All of them find the same findings when they interview those folks.
That's correct.
So it's not really the words people are saying, but how the words are being said. Do you do this sentence by sentence? If you're going to interview somebody for an hour, you don't do every sentence, do you?
Every sentence that person is speaking can be analyzed. Even the uhs and the ums, we eliminate those as background noise, but when the subject is speaking or the person of interest is speaking, we analyze all of it.
And it comes out in some kind of written report?
Yes and no to that question, Sherry. We have this thing called relevance, which is those key questions or those key responses that a person is giving that are important to the final outcome of our case. And so I will take that that relevance and mark it, and that will be reflected in the final report in terms of being more written out. Now, does it give you a word-for-word written out document? No, it does not. But basically, the software is quite intelligent in that it will analyze all sound. It will hide from the human ear anything that it thinks is silence. And then it's up to the user to manually take out the interviewer's voice. And so you have a really pure voice, meaning the person that's being interviewed, only their voice, and it analyzes it by segment. And so a half an hour discussion with somebody might produce, say, 400 to 600 segments, but out of that, you might only be concerned with, say, 100 that are relevant to your case.
Right. It gives you the significant segments.
Yeah, it gives you what's significant.
Okay, you may not be able to answer this question, but if you had 20 people say this sentence, I didn't have sexual intercourse with that woman, Mrs. Lewinsky, on Clinton's, it's going to say false. On somebody else, it's going to say stress because they don't like saying the word sexual intercourse. on somebody else. What kind of scenarios come up in your computer, or are you allowed to talk about that?
I could talk about that. Sherry, what you're talking about is a really unique thing. With Bill Clinton, who was saying that, who is invested in that statement, who has value in that statement, for him it's going to come out with the outcome of either deception or inaccuracy or, you know, whatever it might be. As opposed to one of these other 19 individuals, they are not invested in that deception. It's not their lie. They could, you know, they know that they haven't had sex with her. And now it goes back to those little white lies that Lynn talked about. If it has no value to you, it's not going to be picked up by the software. So if I said to you, oh, I have $1 million and that has no value to me, that's going to come out as truthful because it's not a legitimate lie. A lot of people say, oh, it's, you know, it's a toy. That's just it. If you treat this like a toy, it will not work. There has to be something for somebody to lose, if you know what I mean. It's like if you find out the truth, then.
You have to have the intent to deceive.
There you go.
And
intent
if you don't
deceive.
Have that,
okay.
If I'm trying to hide something from you, such as I stole $1 million and I didn't want you to know about it, it's going to show up any deception, any high stress, any emotional thoughts I might have about it. But if I said I stole $1 million and I'm joking around with you, it's not meaningful, and I don't have the intent to deceive you. I have the intent to mess with you. It's not going to pick that up as a deceptive statement because you're really not trying to deceive me.
Okay, our webmail is up, so if people want to send questions, it's radio@vocalprofiling.com. And we do have a couple of questions that come in, actually, three emails, and there's four questions. Just feel free. Have you ever done the voice of a news reader to see if they were stressed about the news they were reporting?
I haven't done a new. Well, actually, I have. Yes and no. I've done. Remember the Rubin prosecutor in the Natalie Holloway case, and she went on television and made a statement.
Yes.
She was just. It was crazy. All of the stuff I saw with her. She was very stressed out. Her thinking mental effort, mental power was through the roof. But remember, I think English was not her primary language. Plus, she had a lot on the line. She knew if she took one step off of that line that she was going to be toast. And so there was a great deal of stress and a lot of mental effort on her part to be very, very careful in what she was saying. And there was some deception, some other things going on there, too. I've done politicians. They're, you know, some of them are very truthful, some of them are not. The news readers, you can pick up their stress if they're stressed out when they're talking and what issues stress them more and what don't.
Okay, this is a question for me. When you're talking about the Natalie Holloway woman that you were reading, I don't know what you call that, evaluating?
Assessing. Yeah, evaluating. Any term works.
How do you tell the difference between her own personal stress, maybe about getting up and talking in front of a group, and the stress of the subject she's talking about?
Well, stress is measured in variables. Like anything under 25 on our software is considered relatively normal. Once you get to 25 to 35, you're in the higher range. 35 to 45, you're, you know, abnormally high. 45 and above, we jokingly call it, like, you know, the heart attack range kind of a thing. So you know that they're very stressed out. So you can see their stress as they come up and go up and go down over time. So you can see those things that are stressed. We have a baseline, too. So the person sets their own baseline. So the entire conversation is measured as a whole. A baseline is set, and then from that baseline, you can tell what things are higher or what things are lower in stress.
Okay, we have another email. The last few weeks we have been doing political candidates and looking at their motivation. And they talk about the motivation here of Hillary Clinton. It's she's trying to please who
is looking at her. Have you taken, the question they're asking here, have you taken a set of political candidates all talking about the same thing so that you can look at the intention? The question they're answering is, or is asking is, can you look at the intention of political candidates and what they're really saying or not saying?
Well, to answer the question, I have not done any political candidates all talking about the same thing at the same time. The intention is a little bit more difficult, but I think that if you look at intention the way that the software looks at it, if they, let's say somebody's pro-choice, and they are, but their political party disallows that, so they're saying that they are not pro-choice. So their intention is to make the public believe that they are not pro-choice. When they say that on the software, because their reality is that they are, it's going to come out as deceptive. So intention.
It would be very interesting.
Yeah, it would be very interesting
with the same questions to find out who truly believes in what they're saying.
Saying, yeah. I think that the whole military thing, you could see who's wavering and who's not. You could see, you know, some of the promises and things that they make, if they're really invested in those or not. So it is measurable, but not probably in the way that this individual is thinking.
Another question from our audience. Have you ever seen a false positive? I don't really know what that means, but maybe you guys do.
A false positive. If they're referring to somebody who says something and it's I would say that there probably have been instances of that. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but nothing is absolutely perfect, and so
I have seen one false positive.
Have you? Okay.
Yes, and it was a actually, she works in Washington, D.C., and she covered the Air Florida crash, and she covered the snipers on the media in Washington, D.C. She's a media representative. She did an interview with us, and we asked her what her most stressful case was that she covered, and it was the Air Florida crash. And it said false statement. Well, we don't see false statements normally unless it's a true false statement. And we waited for a while and then asked her again, what was your most traumatic story? And she said, Air Florida, false statement. Well, we believe she was suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, because afterwards she broke down, and it was very difficult for her because she hadn't talked about it since the incident. It was the first time she had spoken about that case, whereas when she talked about the D.C. snipers, which was also very disturbing, she didn't have that false statement. She didn't have anything. She was telling the truth, and there was no emotional attachment to it. But when she said Air Florida, it had a false statement, and her emotions were all over the place. She just never talked about it. So in a way, that's a way to pick up the post-traumatic stress syndrome when you're talking with somebody. It throws off the signals, but you have to look at the rest of the readings, and that's what you learn in training.
Mm-hmm. So because she had not actually dealt with the situation in full mentally, that it was not the most stressful thing, because she still needed to finish her work mentally there before she could
never talked about it.
Yeah.
She never faced it.
Here's a really interesting question. Are there any laws about what you can and can't do with this? For instance, are you going to release this or make it available to insurance companies to discriminate against people who might have issues that they don't want the insurance company to reveal? Boy.
Ooh, that's a good question.
For the most part, people, and we work with some insurance companies, if somebody has a legitimate claim, they're not afraid of this technology at all. If somebody has something to hide, they're terrified of this technology. They don't want it disclosed. The other thing is, this law or this technology doesn't fall under the same laws as the polygraph and as CBSA. It's not considered a device. It's a software. And you let them know that you're using it. And that's the big thing with insurance companies or with any agency. You just let them know that you're using it. And most of the time, people cooperate. For the most part, I think people are honest.
Yeah.
It's just those that want to deceive are terrified of it.
So, and as far as insurance companies, too, We're referring to insurance companies that are associated with, you know, home ownership, car ownership,
yeah.
things of that nature. We're not referring to health care, and
correct.
I just want to make sure that that is clear.
Yeah, that's it's automobile loss, theft.
You know, things of material.
If your car is stolen and there's a flat-screen TV in the back seat all of a sudden and a Rolex watch that's missing too, that's going to show as deceptive.
Has anybody used this for all of these people who have raped these companies of $60 million and then those kinds of things? Have they been used in those cases?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, it hasn't been used in those cases.
Because that would certainly be interesting.
Here's another question. The awareness of the technology is getting out there, and there's a lot of users of the technology that are expressing their satisfaction with the use of the technology. It's a relatively new technology compared to polygraphs, so people just still are not aware of it.
I know one of the police units here in Portsmouth, very near us, they love it because they can get to the bottom of something, and it just helps them not spend so much of their time and resources
mm-hmm.
on trying to interrogate these people.
Maybe
this is a quick question. How do you tell the difference between being nervous and telling a lie? Is that possible?
Being nervous, you know, for example, talking on this show tonight, I was a little bit nervous about getting on there, but just because I'm nervous does not mean that I'm going to be deceptive with you. Nervousness, just like stress, is not an outright sign of deception. It can be associated with deception, however. So if I have this nervousness, which is I'm going to call it a negative energy running through me, then my frequencies are going to be, running. Maybe I'm going to have higher anxiety or higher attention associated with that nervousness. That could be red. And just because I have high tension or high anxiety does not mean that I am being deceptive. The same is true about stress. And that's the big advantage point of the layered voice analysis system.
Do you think this should be used in hiring practices?
It is being used in hiring practices. We have several law enforcement agencies in the state of Wisconsin that use this for hiring practices.
Well, could a normal
company... The advantage of using this in a hiring process versus a polygraph, in some of our agencies, our federal agencies, when they hire people and they use a polygraph, and there's some specific, and a lot of people have heard a lot of media coverage over it, they've not gotten a job or they've lost their job because they failed a polygraph. That's what I was talking about earlier. If
mm-hmm.
you fail it, you're done. They don't know anything else about you. They just know that you failed a polygraph. With this technology, it's a focus tool. So they talk about themselves, and you base your next question off their last answer. And they reveal more about themselves that way.
Okay, we have 3 minutes left. I can't believe this hour's over. But I want two questions, and we've got 3 minutes. What do you want people to know about this technology, and what are you doing with it now?
One of the big things I want people to know about the technology is that it does not profile. It is not gender or race related. It is an unbiased piece of technology, and it's used on the frequency of the human voice, and it reduces manpower hours. It draws attention to areas of interest. Those who have no concerns are not going to be affected by it. Those who have something to hide will be. And it is a very user-friendly technology. And Cindy, you can add in, because you're in charge of training and have been exposed to a lot of people, a lot of different things that they talk about on a daily basis of what they use it for.
Our users are very satisfied. They're finding themselves solving crimes quicker, getting to the eliminating suspects quicker, getting to the key persons in a more timely fashion, hiring the best candidates for their jobs, resolving crimes more readily, and reducing manpower hours is indeed one of the advantages as well. It's a new technology that has a place. I think that as people become more aware of its power, that they're going to be more inclined to want to learn more about it. It's a interesting and new technology that is right on the cutting edge of a new kind of science in the United States.
So investigators, whether private or public, policemen, national security,
yes,
theft prevention,
yes,
do you have
border
more?
Crossings,
border crossing, security of any kind, you know, customs, anything of that nature could it could be used for.
There's one more important thing. I know we said a lot about polygraph. It's one of the only tools that can be used with a polygraph hand in hand in the pre-poly examination or interview. We can interview people, and then they can use the polygraph afterwards and use questions that are very, very meaningful. So those in law enforcement who are listening who think that this is a tool that's going to replace the polygraph, it's a tool that can be used with the polygraph.
So what we can leave people with is the idea that privacy is an illusion, because layered voice analysis can certainly get to the root. I hope that someday this becomes available to the public and we can use it on ourselves to get to the root of our own issues and what we really feel and get rid of the mask of what's going on with our own being. Thank
I think
you
that's a great idea, Sherry.
Our time is up.
Thank
I
you, Sherry.
There's lots more questions, so we'll have you back.
All right.
And I want to know more about 9/11 and what's going on with security, so... We'll see you guys tomorrow, Monday, Vocal Profiling Live here on BBS Radio. We're going to talk about the candidates and how they feel about health reform. Until tomorrow.
Bye-bye.